Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavati Tamastu Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Chapter 10 of Panchadashi. This chapter is called Nataka Deepa Prakarana. So it's the Prakarana, it's the text that's kind of elaborating, unfolding the Vedanta, using here in this case the analogy of the light in a theater. So it'll be mostly the second half. It'll be really nice to see how they do this analogy. But the first part is really kind of a beautiful just unfoldment of the vision itself. Start with that. So the first one. Paramatma Dvayananda.
Paramatma Dvayananda.
Purna Purvam Svamayaya.
Purna Purvam Svamayaya.
Swayameva Jagat Bhutva.
Swayameva Jagat Bhutva.
Pravishat jivarupataha.
Pravishat jivarupataha.
Parama Atma Advaya Ananda Purnaha. Purvam Swa Mayaya. Swayam Eva Jagat Bhutva. Pravishat Jiva Rupataha. Jiva Rupataha. In this top line, the Parama Atma Advayananda Purnaha. Purvam. Purvam is the key word. This word Purvam means Srishtehe Prak. Prak means like before. Srishti is Srishti, the creation. Srishtehe, before the creation. So before this creation, before the manifestation of this creation, what was there before? Parama Atma. The Atma, which is Parama. Parama, if you remember, this word parama or param means desha, kala, vastu, parichedaha. Paramam is that which enjoys no limitation whatsoever. No limitation in reference to desha, space, kala, time, vastu, differentiation in terms of objects or gunas, in terms of any type of quality. So when you say the paramatma, we're talking about this pratyagatma. Pratyagatma means this innermost self. And I recognize that this innermost self, in fact, is Brahman. So I can say this atma is really the paramatma. My atma is the paramatma. It's my self is free of any type of limitation. Aparicheda means without any type of boundary or limitation in terms of time, space, and quality. So it's a way of saying this Atma is the Paramatma. This Atma is Brahman. So the very self that I am is Brahman. So this Paramatma before, so Purvam means Srishtehe Prak, before the creation, before the manifestation of this creation, what was there? The Paramatma, which is Advaya, non-dual, means one without a second. Ananda, Ananda Purnaha, absolutely full. Ananda, when we talk about the self as being Ananda, the other word, let me just put these two side by side. So you know very well, often we have the Satchitananda as a lakshana for the self. It's Sat, it's a being, existence, which itself is consciousness, which itself is Ananda. So then now, what does the Ananda mean? And to understand, really, we put this other that's from the Taittiriya Upanishad, very similar. Satyam, Jnanam, Anantam. So Sat, Satyam. Chit, right? Jnanam. Knowledge means. And then the Ananda, Anantam. Anantam is a way, a better word, because Anantam means limitless, without end. Antam means having an end. Ananta means without end. And so if you say that yourself, the Atma, is Desha Kala Vastu Aparicheda, it's the Parama Atma, it has no limitation whatsoever. And so sometimes Swamiji will say, this is actually in this understanding when that this kind of clicked for me, it was a big deal, that what we mean by the Ananda, Ananda, when you say the Atma is Ananda, it's translated as bliss, which is so misleading. You have to think of your own me, your own self, without any encumbrance at all. So you're just simply you, without the any type of limitation, including, you know, your emotional limitations and all these type of things, but also the limitations of birth and death and continual change and all of the different types of vrittis and the emotional spectrum of vrittis. Also the sickness and the limitations caused by sickness in ill health and the prana and the upadis in general. Those are all creating competing affects with your own being. And so your own being, the ananda or the unimpeded nature of yourself from its own standpoint is always as is. But from the standpoint of the upadis, whether it be your body or the pranas or the manas or whatever it happens to be, that is creating limitations and also affects that then from the standpoint of the mind or the buddhi, for instance, those affects are mixed completely mixed with the simple, infinite being of yourself. By simple, I mean absolutely non-dual. There's nothing more simple than non-dual, right? Because there's no parts at all. There's no second thing. So you just simply are what you are. If you know yourself, it's not like you have a right side or a left side and an up and a bottom, you know, or that you're black or red or yellow or blue or whatever. These things do not apply at all. Your being is just very simply what it is. There are not two ways to know it. You cannot partially know it because there aren't any parts. How can you partially know it? You know, there's no space. There's no time. There's no type of duality or internal division. So there's no such thing as having partial knowledge of your being, of this me. And even when you think of it as an ajnani or just as a person in the world, when you think me, like I'm going to the store or I'm going to read the book or whatever, this me is not something divisible. You don't have two sides to me, you know. It's not there. There's only one me, and this one me then is wearing many, many, many different dresses, many, many, many different experiences. But my own self is not divisible. I am seen through the lens of many different experiences, but no matter what those experiences are, I'm still the one indivisible me. And so now say, you were to take off all of these dresses, all of these upadis, what would be there? Exactly the same thing. The one indivisible me, which has now been differentiated from these upadis. Okay? Whether the Ishwara upadi, which is the whole Maya Swarupa, the whole Maya Upadhi. This me needs to be differentiated from that, and it needs to be differentiated from the Jiva Upadhi, this body, mind, sense organs, which we now have different degrees of identification with. But what we realize as we do that differentiation is not that the me changes. In fact, it's that this me doesn't change at all. That's what we realize. It does not change at all. But it is freed from the ajnana, the ignorance, which caused this very complete identification with the upadhi. We've gone through why that is so complete. It's really because of the sattva, which in which that consciousness from the standpoint of the upadhi is as though manifest, and then the whatever the sattva falls upon, whatever the mind and sense organs fall upon, then those things, you know, enjoy consciousness, they enjoy knownness. Or if something is acting as an upadhi, it means I can identify with it. So, for instance, when the subtle body feels this physical body, because of the sense of touch, which reflects me, and because the sense of touch is pervading this body, I can take myself that this body, I'm a conscious being, this body, you know, is me, because it enjoys me, this conscious being. And so, because of the ajnanam, in any case, this what we call anyonya adhyasa, this mutual superimposition, is always going to be taking place from the standpoint of the body. Right? It has to, from the body, mind, sense organs, really because of the nature of sattva, of the mind and sense organs, a viveka is required. And viveka is on the part of the mind, and the viveka is brought about by the pramana, the utilization of the Upanishad pramanas, so that viveka is brought about. But there's really no way for the mind to bring that about by itself, because it can't turn around and look at the self. When it turns around, then it's just looking in a different direction, right? But it's always looking in a direction. And say it just goes into its own being without knowledge, so it just goes into really the adhishtana, which is its own truth, it goes into that in some meditation exercises or what, it goes into my own being and gets absorbed in that, then who's getting absorbed? The mind. The mind is having that, from its own standpoint, the mind is now having this samadhi experience, or this tremendous shanti experience, or this experience of God. But it is the mind that is having that from its own standpoint. You know, there's no viveka there. That's what I'm saying. So this viveka has to take place. But so now when they start with as this first verse, he says before Bipurvam means prak, before Srishtihi, before the manifestation of the creation, which includes the manifestation of your body, mind, sense organs. What is there? The Parama Atma, the Parama, the limitless Brahman, the Atma, which is non-dual. Parama means there's no, that it's not subject to any type of duality whatsoever. So that non-dual, that Parama Atma, which is Advaya, because it's Parama, it's absolutely yourself has no second thing, you know, because it's Parama, it's not subject to any type of limitation whatsoever. If it's not subject to a limitation, there's no second thing. If there's a second thing, then it would be subject immediately to limitation. It's not subject to any limitation. So, because of that, it's advaya. Non-dual. Dvaya means dual. Advaya, non-dual. So this Parama Atma, which is advaya, which is ananda, which is completely full because there's no second thing. It is ananda because there is no limitation whatsoever to me. There's nothing competing with my being. And so I am just free to be as I am. And as I am happens to be the Advayananda. It happens to be the non-dual Paramatma, the very Brahman from whom this creation has come. So here he says, before the creation, what was there? What was there? So imagine no creation, no time, space, no subject-object differentiation. Nothing. So he says, what was there? Just the Paramatma, myself, my being, Paramatma, which is Adwaya, non-dual, no second thing, and that is limitless, ananda, purnaha, completely full, because there's no second thing for it to be empty. You know, there's no possibility. Like, it, you can say it's full, but it only fills the glass halfway, you know. But no, there's no second thing, so it's nothing else but it, so it's completely purnaha. Purnaha, this word, is a past passive participle. It comes from the root pr, which is a long r, and it means to fill. Like if you were to fill a glass. Purna means it's filled, the glass is filled. And so to have, imagine a full glass, it can't take one more drop. There's no room for one more drop. If there's one more drop, then you'll spill. That's purnaha. So here, purnaha is that which is completely full. There's no place, room for anything else. There's no second thing. So purnaha, that purnamadav, that we always chant. You know, from that infinite, this infinite comes. From this infinite, you know, this infinite goes back to the infinite, leaving the infinite alone, something like that. Infinite in purnamadav. So here, before the creation, so let's put in a different kind of language. Remember also that the creation is cyclical. It means there's no beginning to it, but it comes into manifestation, goes into resolution, into manifestation, into resolution. So before the creation, who was here? Only me. Only my being. I alone was here. And then, swamayaya, by my maya, swa is my own. By my own maya, right? By my own maya, swayam eva jagad bhutva. Then, having myself, swayam eva, the self, myself alone, jagad bhutva, bhutva, having become this creation. Swayam means oneself, it's reflexive. So here, it's referring back to the Paramatma. I'm saying me because that is who the Paramatma is. So that in the beginning, before the creation, what was here? Only the non-dual Paramatma, the limitless Ananda. That alone was here. Then, before the creation comes then what? Then swamayaya, by the very maya of the Paramatma of yours, that belongs to yourself, by your own maya, swayam eva jagad bhutva, yourself, having become yourself alone, having become this creation. Okay? By what? By means of my maya. So, and what? Pravishat jivarupataha, that paramatma, which is your own being, pravishat jivarupataha, entered the creation in the form of the jiva. Okay? This is from the directly from the Taittiriya Upanishad. So, I'm going to introduce, I think I need this. There's a couple of terms here that I want to introduce to you because they're fundamental terms for kind of the teaching methodology of the Vedanta. It's called Adhyaropa Apavada. Anybody heard that? Adhyaropa Apavada? What it means is that in the teaching methodology, he starts out with what we call the Adhyaropa. The Adhyaropa is this manifestation, the projection of the creation, you know. And so here we are, you know. This, what happens in the beginning, there's only the non-dual Atma, but then from this non-dual Atma, this creation is born, the creation comes into being. So now we have the creation. So the creation is actually because swamayaya, by my own maya, this whole creation has come into being by means of my own maya. Okay. Now we have to deal with this creation. So the adhyaropa is accepting this creation as here, then we have a lot to teach about the creation. So the adhyaropa is actually the superimposition. Because maya, this creation comes from maya, from my own maya. That's like saying, this imagination of mine, you know, before the imagination was there, I alone was there. Before this imagination came into being, I alone was there. But now that it's come into being, right, I have now become taken on the form of this imagination, right? It's come into being, and it says having, so he says like this, Swayam Eva Jagad Rupa. So now, having become this creation, which is myself alone, having become this creation, which is myself alone, then I enter it as it in the form of the jiva. So now, say you were to say that in reference to your imagination, you know, before the imagination, I alone was there. Then, having taken on the form of this, by means of my own maya, having taken on the form of this imagination, I then enter it as the jivas that are there in the imagination. There's no jivas in the imagination, say, then I just am manifest as this creation, and I give the set chit to the creation, to the imaginal creation. But it doesn't stop there. There are also jivas in that imagination. And I enter those jivas. We'll talk about, there's no time here involved, but nevertheless, we say it this way. The imagination comes, and as the imagination comes, I naturally enter into the imagination in the form of every jiva. Why do I say that? Because the conscious being, the Brahman, the self that I am, now becomes as though the knower in reference to the upadis in that particular, in that imagination, because those upadis have sattva, they have a mind, they have sense organs, they have the sense of touch, which gives a reality to that jiva upadi that brings about all of that ignorance. But what it is, really, I'm different than the rug. The rug, I wouldn't say, you know, what Bhagavan said, you know, first the creation becomes manifest. I become the world alone through my maya, and then I enter it. I enter it, you know, as the rug and as the rock and as these things. No. I enter it, I'm there present in the form of all of the jivas. I mean, any jiva that has a sukshma sharira, right, Bhagavan has as though entered, because there's really, in reality, there can be no entry because maya is mitya. Being mitya, it has no distance at all or no being at all apart from the Paramatma. So we spend, you know, all this time kind of establishing that the conscious being that you are, the me that you are, is the very adhishtana of the whole creation. There's no separation at all. So there is, and because there's no separation at all, even your imagination, say if we were using this example, but it's a very useful example because it's also true, this imagination itself has no distance or being away from me. And in fact, I become this imagination through my maya. Not that the Atma, the self, goes through any type of change. That's what we say. Your being is always the same, vivarta upadana karana. It means yourself never goes through any type of change. We use things like dream and imagination, but we also have to be more specific and see that that's true even in reference to all of my emotions, or it's true in reference to whatever relationship I'm in. It's true in relationship to every vritti that I have. I go through no change whatsoever. I remain changeless as the adhishtana. But now we're looking at me as conscious being in reference to, from the standpoint of the Paramatma, the truth of my own being, this with the maya projects as the whole creation, right? And this whole creation, using my maya, it projects, I myself become this whole creation, not from the standpoint of me, but from the standpoint of the creation. There is no distance for me to say that there's me and the creation. So I have to say, this is me alone. There can't be a creation out here and I'm back here. There's no space because I'm the very existence which the creation enjoys. And we experience that. If I say, it is, it is, it is. Just in the most simple way, but it's very profound. It is, it is, it is, it is, it is. There's no experience inside or out that isn't that doesn't fully enjoy your being, the existence that you are. That you are the invariable. Your amness, that's in our language, your amness is the invariable in every experience that you have. It doesn't come and go. And so if this whole creation comes from me, that amness, which is the Paramatma, which has no limitation because it's not an object in space, then this whole creation enjoys my amness, that or beingness, which is what gives it its existence. So I can't pull it out and have some sort of space in between this creation and me, or it wouldn't exist because it has no existence apart from me. And so this whole self has me as its being, and so therefore, in being mitya, therefore I can say it is me, because who else is it? Who else is it? It has no being of itself, so it can't say, well, I'm me, and then this creation is it, something else. It is nothing else, because it's just like the pot can't say, I am the pot, and it's my friend the clay over there, you know? That's myself over there, the clay, and I'm the pot over here. There's no pot over here, and there's no creation over here away from me. So I am that's why we say I'm the invariable, the adhishtana of every experience I have. Which is so profound, because you can never get away from yourself, and your mind can never get away from you. That's why in the previous one, the previous verses that we did, you know, it's like in meditation, when we say bring your mind back, what does that really mean, you know? How to bring your mind back in the Keno Upanishad. There is no back. You're already there. And so all they mean by that is for the buddhi to recognize what is there. There's no distance. There's no bringing your mind back. Let's bring my mind back into a more subtle place. You are already there in the gross place and in the subtle place. You know, you're there in the agitated place and the happy place. There's no place that can exist without your being. So there's really no bringing the mind back. It's just a simple matter of recognizing yourself, whatever the vritti happens to be. That's what they mean by that. It's just the act of on the part of the buddhi that may have gotten lost in the different upadis, the different type of vrittis. You may have gotten lost in there, got lost in your emotions, as though you're lost, even though there is no distance at all between yourself and the one who is lost, right? There's no distance. And so it's just a matter of a split second and less than a split second, just the slightest shift, recognizing, you know, in a less than a split second, my own being that has no distance at all from the upadi. That's what I need to get used to that. And so here, we'll get to this more ajarupa in a minute. I'm unfolding it, but you don't realize that yet. Okay. So then he says, having myself become this creation, which has been made through my own maya, then I enter in the form of the jiva. All that means is that there are jivas. Jivas means sukshma shariras, which are taking on some form, some sort of an upadi, which that sukshma sharira, really through the sense of touch, feels that upadi and gives a sense of me, of my being, to the upadi because of self-ignorance. Because it's not like yourself has entered really in any way, entered and kind of, you know, molded itself into the upadi. There's no change at all from your standpoint. It's just that the sukshma sharira with the sattva reflects that consciousness or manifests that consciousness as though, you know, and so from the standpoint of this body seems to be you. Just very simply, it seems to be you. The sense organs seem to be you. Your mind and your thoughts and your buddhi and your manas and all the emotions, they all seem to be you. Yeah, and it's a really strong seeming because there's no one to think otherwise, and everybody's in the same condition. You know, so all the animal seems to be that animal, etc. All humans seem to be that person. That's how it is, and we're all in agreement. So that makes the Ajnanam much stronger because since it's a universal Ajnanam, a universal ignorance, we're all supporting each other in our ignorance, you know. And when there's ignorance there, you don't know you're ignorant. So you have ignorance of your ignorance, you know. That's really the nature of ignorance. Once you have some knowledge of your ignorance, that's the almost, that you're just like a hair's breadth away from that ignorance being gone, because now you've become aware of your ignorance, that there's something that you don't know. But what if you have no idea? And no one has any idea, except for a few little creatures, little mumukshus running about, a few jnanis running about. There's only support for you, for your idea, because everybody, it's a shared ajnanam. And so the shared ajnanam we have to be, each individual has to be released from, because they become a mumukshu. But until that time, you know, you are this. That's how it is. And so this idea of entering, when we say the creation came and then I entered into all of the jivas, there's no really entry on the part of the self. There's only the as-though entry, as being reflected in a mirror. As though being reflected, entering into a mirror. You know? And so say we're all little mirrors walking around, you know, and then each mirror is a mirror that as though reflects consciousness. And so even though there's only one consciousness, one adhishtana, everybody that has a sattva, has that mind and sense organs, they take themselves, I'm the conscious being, I'm the conscious being, I'm the conscious being. Sometimes we liken it to a fun house. If you've ever gone into a fun house, and have you seen those hall of mirrors? So you look in, you look into this one mirror, you just look in, and all of a sudden, there's literally maybe an infinite number of you, right? Just because of the reflecting mirrors, and they reflect off of each other, so it's countless. You see countless forms of yourself. And then the more sophisticated ones, some of the mirrors are kind of, you know, warped a little bit. So then you see countless forms of yourself, but they're all kind of different because the mirrors are warped in different ways, you know. That's the experience. And, you know, if each one of those mirrors is enjoying, it's as though the mirror is the sattva, it's enjoying consciousness, and why wouldn't it say, this is me, and that is you, and that is you, and that is you. That's the house of mirrors. So in though, we are as though caught within a house of mirrors. There are all of the different living creatures, you know, little jivas running about, reflecting because of the sattva. Me. The me, this very personal self that I know to be me, is Brahman. That this is the self that is reflected as though in the house of mirrors, as though reflected. It's not really reflected because it can't be objectified, but we have to stretch the illustration. This me is not reflected, but it is the truth. It is the truth of every one of those mirrors that is reflected. It's kind of interesting. It's kind of a interesting meditation, but if you just imaginally hold up a mirror to your face, you know, you do see your face in the mirror. But where is the self-experience? It's not in the mirror. Nothing happens to the self-experience, but the reflection of the body is there. But the self-experience, or the face, let's put it, I'm not trying to go to Brahman here, I'm just trying to see what the viveka that's required there. Where is the self-experience when you're looking at your face in a mirror? You know, you see yourself there. You know, it's a really clean mirror. It's a good, high-quality mirror. It's a really good reflection of your face. But where are you? There's no self-experience in the mirror. nothing happens to the self experience at all. It just remains exactly as is. So what if I have 5 mirrors all gathered around, so I have now like 10 reflections or 5 reflections? You know, still, the reflections are all there and they're all me. But where am I in those reflections? You know, where's the self experience? The self experience is with the real me. I don't know if I can say that. Not with a reflection, it's with me, right? That's where it is. So now, say we're all mirrors. You know, each upadhi is as though a mirror, and the mirrors are all taking themselves as to be me. Why? How can they do that when they're not me? Well, because they're as though a reflection of me, right? And I am there. It's not that I'm not there, but I am there. If I hold a mirror up to my face, the sense of me is not taking place in the mirror. It is me. It's taking place in me as myself. Myself doesn't come and then enliven the mirror with itself. Right? The my own self doesn't move in any way at all. It just remains me. And there is only one of me. So now that's why it's nice to think, okay, we have 5 mirrors. There's still only one of me. But now all 5 mirrors are reflecting my face, but they're not reflecting and cannot reflect the adhishtana, the reality, you know, of the real one, of the real one. And so what's important about that is that the me experience that I'm so attached to that makes me me, and that I identify totally this me with this upadhi, as though I identified it with the reflection, even though it doesn't belong there at all, you know, identify this very personal me with the upadhi, with my body, with my mind, with my sense organs, with whatever's going on, they all are just taken for granted to be me, but actually they're not at all. I mean, not at all. This all is mithya. It has no being at all. It doesn't in any way contribute meanness to you, to yourself. Yourself is the adhishtana. Yourself is the invariable. This me is the invariable. I am there in the me that I know to be me is there in every experience that I have, every vritti that I have. Everyone. There's no exception. And so, in terms of all the vrittis, in terms of all the experiences that pass through, they're continually negating each other. But nothing, I'm not touched in any way. So, this can be very obvious once it's known. But until it's known, this what we call superimposition is there. You know, where the upadhis totally enjoy me. In fact, the whole universe enjoys me in terms of the sat. It is, it is, it is, it is. It enjoys me in terms of the self-evident chit, also consciousness. It is known, it is known, it is known, it is known. You don't see is known. Is known is not objectified. Right? Look at that. See the is known over there? That is known. Oh, look at its is knownness. No. There's no is known. There's no is knownness that's objectified. There's only self-evident me that in language we say is known, is known, is known. And self-evident me, even in reference to myself, I'll say, I am known. I am, I exist. Of course I am known, not as an object, but I am known. And that knownness, that self-shining consciousness, which is me, anything that comes in my purview in the form of a vritti is known. I am the is-knownness, the vritti is mitya. For the Ishwara Upadhi, the sattva, like as though, like an infinite mind, the sattva pervades the entire Maya Upadhi. And so, what is its experience? Is known. It is known. What is Ishwara's experience as the self? And me. So exactly the experience that I am. There's not two me's. There's not two conscious beings. So this me is the very me that reflects in the Ishwara Upadhi and reflects in all Jiva Upadhis. There's not two of us. There's only one of us. And so when this creation comes into manifestation, part of the manifestation, if you remember this Panchikarana and how the universe comes, you know, the five elements and the sattva, rajas, tamas aspect of all of the five elements and the sattva elements, the sattva aspect of the five elements makes up the mind and the sense organs for the jiva, and it makes up Hiranyagarbha, the pervasion of consciousness from the standpoint of subtle Hiranyagarbha. It pervades the whole Maya Upadhi. And so that is knownness from the standpoint of Ishwara. The whole creation is known because the self-evident me reflects in the sattva. And every jiva within the creation also, the whole creation is known as Hiranyagarbha, as Virat. And every jiva in the creation also is known because I am known. Because of self-evident me. So everything shines after me. And so that's why we say, when the creation, in the Taittiriya Upanishad, when this creation projects, the jivas are included in that projection. The jivas, each jiva has beginningless. It's gone through a beginningless series of cycles, of kalpas, and the creation is in a manifest condition. All the jivas also are in unmanifest condition. When the creation comes back, then they go through the same process of whatever is the appropriate karmas for them. Then they'll take another birth, and it goes on and on and on like that. So when the creation is manifest, the jivas also are included in that creation. And as once they are there, then Brahman as though enters. There's no entry. But since it's there, and the sattva is there, then that reflection is immediately there, and so Bhagavan has as though entered his own creation in the form of the jivas. But you have to understand that there's no distance for there to be any real entry. It's the entry, it's just a figure of speech because of the sattva. When the sattva is there, there's entry. There's no time involved. You know? So for the rest of the creation, the things that don't themselves have sattva, then they're not something that is walking around like a conscious being in the creation. They're like rocks and stones and things. Those are known because of the pervasion of sattva in the whole creation, because of the sattva pervading the whole creation, and therefore knownness pervades the whole creation. And that's what we say the creation is Ishwara, conscious being. It's like we say you are jiva, you are a conscious being. Ishwara is a conscious being. Why? Because of sattva. If there was no sattva, then you would just be like a rock or something else, and you would be subject to existing and being known. There's something else to understand that about that, though, is we can think, oh, we're jivas. We're the conscious being. Well, not really. Not really. Because remember this wonderful example: if the sun, right, if the sun is shining down upon a mirror, right, and a rock, right, just sitting side by side. Now the sun is going to equally warm both of them. Okay, it's going to cast its rays on both. It will cast equally its heat on both. It might absorb the heat differently, you know. But only one of them is really capable of as though taking the mirror on, taking the sun into itself as though. It's a big as though. But from the standpoint of the mirror, it can have the experience of being the sun. But the rock doesn't get to have that experience, you know. Now, but the interesting thing is, so say this mirror takes itself to be the sun, you know. But if I hold up a mirror to my face, You know, and it, the, what is reflected back is some sort of consciousness. Where is the conscious experience? Is it in the mirror or is it in me? It's a, it's me. Nothing ever happens to me. It doesn't change locations because of the mirror.
Right.
It just stays as me. And so now you say, okay, I have a mirror and I have a rock. And the sun is reflecting in both of them. But does either one of them enjoy the sun experience? Not at all, you know? Not at all. Now say, let's just think of, stretch the example out of reality a little bit. And think of the sun itself as being like a conscious being, you know? And it is illumining the mirror and the rock, but the mirror reflecting it takes itself to be the sun experience, and this one doesn't have that possibility. Where does the sun experience really exist, though? Not in the mirror. It exists in the sun. So this drishtanta is not good because there's a distance between the sun and the mirror. So to start thinking of the mirror even having been able to have the sun experience because of the great distance involved, somehow that doesn't work perfectly, you know. But if we can then take that example and look at it here in reference to myself, my being, illumining, you know, a mind, which is sattva, and illumining a rock. Okay. Now here, in the adhishtana, myself as the adhishtana, There's no space. There's no distance between me and the sattva mind and the tamas rock, right? There's no distance for either one because I'm the adhishtana of both. The sattva mirror, the sattva mind, even though it's as mitya as the tamas rock, right? It's not like one is more or less mitya. Neither one really has any experience other than the self, because it has no existence other than the self. But the rock can't commit the mistake of taking itself to be me, whereas the mind can commit that mistake. The me is there equally in throughout the entire universe, from every which way, wherever there is Maya, whether it's internal or external, like the mind or the sense organs or internal travels or all of these type of things, or heaven worlds or hell worlds, that's all Maya. There's no distance at all between Maya and me. But I am the me. There is no second me. And there is no second thing either. That's what we mean by mitya. It's like the pot saying, you know, I am the clay experience, you know. I am the clay experience. It's absolutely true, but the clay experience belongs to the clay, and the mitya pot has no other experience than the clay. See what I mean? And so it doesn't really matter here. What I'm trying to say is, if you can make these little shifts, the rock. From the standpoint of the rock, there is no me experience. From the standpoint of the mind, in fact, there also is no me experience. Because there's only one me experience. You see, the mind can, because of the sattva, identify itself as being the me experience. But that doesn't mean that it is. Because if I take the mind away, the very same me experience remains totally unchanged. My me experience has nothing to do with the mind or the rock, or with the universe. The manifestation or unmanifest nature of the universe is totally irrelevant to me. And so my self experience is in no way changed or taken away or usurped by in any way the mind. Your mind does not add or subtract from you, from this me. And the rock also doesn't take away from me. It's just, it doesn't have an upadi, which as though reflects me, but I don't need an upadi. The me experience is not dependent on an upadi. See that? Like, it's not, oh, poor rock, it doesn't have the me experience. Well, poor mind, it doesn't have the me experience either. I am the me experience. Me experience means consciousness, so get rid of the whole creation. And what is left? Me. Without even the slightest bit of change. But because of the sattva, the jivas need to gain self-knowledge. The rocks don't have a problem. They have no problem. Because they're not making that mistake. The jivas are making that mistake. The fact is that I am the self with or without the jiva upadi. The jiva upadi does not add to me. But from its own standpoint, there's a lot of suffering. Because of ajnanam on the part of the mind, it takes itself to be me, and it is something that comes and goes and changes and has all of these emotions and all of these raga dveshas and all of these things, and it's suffering like anything, you know? Even though nothing is happening to me. But the suffering is intense. And so there's the story of the universe. Because there's suffering, there's knowledge necessary. And the knowledge is considered as beginningless as the universe for those mumukshus. What to say about that? And when I first understood that, which is really the first couple of, maybe the first month or two that I met Swamiji, I was so relieved. I was so relieved because it was then that I kind of realized there is a God, you know, and that God is benign. Because just think about it, either there's no God, which is its own difficult story, there's no God, but what if there is, huh?
What does benign mean?
Oh, benign means positive, gentle, kind, non-injurious in any way. So that benign, there's a benign God because there's self-knowledge. But now imagine either there's no God, which is one issue, or there is a God and there's no self-knowledge. That is evil. That's unimaginable. What would that... It's better that there be no God than to have a God means that creator, the one from whom the whole creation has come, the one who is sarvajnaha, omniscient, sarvashaktiman, all power, all capacity. These are the words that go through the whole creation in so many different religions. Immanent and transcendent, the creator, all of these, omniscient, all of these. And then we're just left hanging here in ignorance with no way out. That is really the creepiest feeling. And when I understood in a deep way, just because of Swamiji and who he is in the way of unfolding the pramana and all of that, it was such a relief. It went through my whole body that, there is a God and that God is good. And there is such a thing as a guru. By good, I mean benign, because I'm using benign instead of like good and bad, because there's so much good and evil in the world. It's not that there's not good and evil in the world, but your own being, your own nature is not something that is dark. The truth of the whole thing is not dark or sinister, you know. It's benign. It means that there's no harm, that there's love, there's something positive there. And so for me, that and that when I was listening, when you start listening and that pramana starts to work, then you also realize, and some of this ignorance starts to fall off, you also realize that there is this guru that I'd heard about, you know, and I had no idea really what it was, but I wanted one. You know, because they were supposed to make things better. You know, I realize that also exists. That's a huge thing. It's a huge, huge realization that this is real, that there is such a thing as moksha, that there is such a thing as that pramana, that there is such a thing as a guru-sisha relationship, that the universe itself is benign. Underneath the whole thing is the self, really the Satchitatma. And that recognition changes everything, really. It makes life meaningful and purposeful. What if all that life is about is trying to fulfill your raga dveshas and then you die? I mean, what is that? Or what if you just say, life is about, you know, fulfilling your raga dveshas for eternity as you transmigrate over and over and over again. You know, getting these, it's like the example we use for that is like the drowning man in the ocean. That the undertow, he pushes him up and then pulls him down and then pushes him up and pulls him down and pushes him up and pulls him down. For after some time, the being up is not very fun anymore because you realize that you're trapped in this cycle. You know? And now all you want as the drowning person is to be somebody lift you up and set you on the beach, you know, to free you of this endless samsara, you know. So this, as we hear now, we'll do it more in the afternoon, but as we talk about this kind of samsara and the way the creation works, this is called adhyaropa. We have to understand what all of this is, who we are here, and what is the jiva, what is Ishwara, how does the creation project? It's all dealing initially with this world as real, because here we are in this relative world of reality. It's called Vyavahara. So we have to know, we have to understand what this is, but then we then recognize what's called the Upavada. That means it then becomes, as the knowledge becomes complete, it becomes Nitya. So the Adhyaropa Upavada is first we outline everything that's going on in this creation. The whole creation comes from me, is sustained by me, resolves into me. This is what's happening. This is who Ishwara is. This is the Panchikarana. All of these things, so we understand what is going on within this Maya, and then we understand that what it means for it to be Maya. So that's called Adhyaropa Upavada. We'll see more of that. It's fundamental to the whole teaching methodology of the Upanishads.
Om Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.